Welcome, everyone. This is Fit as a Fiddle Plus. My name is Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income mentor, but I also have an academy called the Kathy Benner International Academy. And one of my lanes is health and fitness. And I am a firm believer that health comes before wealth, because if you work all your life and you don't take some time to take care of yourself and take care of your health, by the time you're my age, you end up then having to spend your money to try to buy your health back. So let's don't do that. Let's just buckle down and get our health on the calendar. That's the biggest problem that I see with a lot of folks, is that they just don't even put it on the calendar. They have to pay themselves first, is what I always say. So make sure you start your day with some good healthy practices. And so that's what we're going to talk about. Now, our group tonight is called Fit as a Fiddle Plus. It's myself, Kathy Benner, and Rita Brewer. I'm going to introduce Rita here in just a moment. But I wanted to tell you a little bit about the Fit as a Fiddle Plus. We are all about health and wellness, and being fit as a fiddle takes on a multifaceted meaning traditionally associated with physical well-being. You've always heard, oh, I'm fit as a fiddle. But now we want it to encompass more areas than just the physical. Not only would it include physical, but the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, and then, of course, even the financial. So join us on this transformative journey as we delve into comprehensive insights and practices to elevate your well-being in each of these dimensions. So I want to now introduce to you Rita Brewer. She is my co-host, my co-mod for this particular Fit as a Fiddle Plus, and I'm going to let her tell you what she does.
Thank Rita. You so much, Kathy. Always a pleasure to be with you. Yep, I'm Rita Brewer. I've been a clinically practicing physician assistant for over 33 years. My passion is now preventative health and wellness, because we're doing a horrible job at keeping people healthy with our healthcare system. So our obesity and chronic disease rates just continue to climb, and we need to do a better job at it. So I've kind of jumped outside of the medical model a little bit and started my own health coaching practice, so I can help people reverse their chronic diseases, especially like to work with diabetic patients, because it's preventable in most cases, a reversible condition. So, all my information is at ritabrewer.com for private health coaching. That is my thing that I love to do. I'm a speaker as well. Got a speaking engagement coming up with a medical conference I'm excited about.
Hey.
And I'm excited to talk to our guest tonight, because he's got a lot to share about that topic as well.
I love it. Rita, thank you so much. I follow you on Facebook. So for those of you that are interested, you can follow me on Facebook. You can follow Rita on Facebook. And again, you can go to meetup.com and you can look up Fit as a Fiddle Plus and see all of our events listed there. So I just want to introduce to you now Dr. Jared Day. He was born in Chicago, Illinois, raised in Tennessee. He graduated from Morehouse College and Duke University School of Medicine and has practiced as a vascular surgeon since 2011. Recently, he started a minimally invasive vein treatment center in Cary, North Carolina. And after being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, he started his journey into health advocacy, promoting disease prevention and even treatment through what he calls the miracle of movement. He is an avid runner. And he also spends his free time with his wife, Dr. Tamika. And for those of you that may remember, we just talked to Dr. Tamika on a podcast or two ago, and his three children in Raleigh, North Carolina. So welcome, Dr. Jared. Thank you
Dr.
for being here.
Gerard,
thank you so
right?
much. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you
Gerard.
So much for inviting me.
Gerard, thank
yep,
you.
Yep, it's Gerard. It's okay.
Sorry about that. I know a Jared, no so yes.
No problem. No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
We appreciate that you are here. My biggest question is, what inspired you to become a doctor?
Well,
I can't even imagine. Give us a little bit of your background and what inspired you to even become a doctor.
I've always been interested in health and science. When I was a kid, you know, my mom, she recognized my interest and she got me a microscope. So I would run outside and grab stuff and see if I can look at it under a microscope. And I found out you can't look at rocks, but you can look at leaves. So then, you know, playing doctor, all that fun kid stuff. But then it kind of culminated into me following around doctors and hospitals when I was in high school, and figured out, hey, maybe I should do this. And so that's kind of what inspired me to do it.
And how did you choose vascular surgery of all the specialties
Oh,
out
that
there?
was oh, that was a that's a long story. The first introduction of vascular surgery was when I was following an anesthesiologist. I was in Boston. It was actually the Boston Youth Leadership Forum on Medicine, which I think they still have. But this was like in the early 90s. And so yeah, I was following an anesthesiologist around, and one of the surgeries I was, looking at with him was a open aortic surgery, which is like a big is a huge deal. It's I don't want to go into the gory details, but just imagine someone's belly is wide open and this pulsating giant artery in there. And so I was looking over the what separates the anesthesiologist from the surgeon is this big curtain, right? It's kind of a curtain. So I was looking over the curtain, trying to get, stepping stools to look. And I was kind of glued to that. I was like, oh my gosh, he's like opening that up. He's doing all this crazy stuff inside this person's belly. I was like, I kind of want to do that. But so that was my first introduction. And then, as a medical student, you get more into it. And so I figured out that of all the surgical specialties, I like that one the most. I like vascular surgery, I like ped surgery. And then I finally decided vascular surgery was more fun, more it's more than just operating too, which is another thing I love about vascular surgery. It's like a radiology component, which I like, and some other components. So it's a vascular surgery is a specialty that encompasses a bunch of other different disciplines, and that's why I love it.
There's nice variety too, right? And I told
Yes.
you my very first PA job was vascular surgery as well. I did that for 5 years, and there's a lot of different procedures that you get to do. So
Exactly.
it's not like the same ones are, like some specialties are much more limited with the ones that they do, right? So you've
Exactly.
been doing that for, since 2011, you said?
Yeah, 2011. I did a 2-year vascular fellowship, and so that ended in 2011. So yeah, I've been mostly in the southeastern U.S. My first job was in Virginia. I trained in Virginia, then I worked in Virginia for some time, then Georgia, and now we're here in North Carolina.
Yeah, so he got to see, like I've spoken about before, the worst of the worst complications, like of diabetes and heart disease and high cholesterol and high blood pressure and all the damage that it does to the blood vessels when not properly treated, right? So vascular is like that
Exactly.
end stage of disease where you're trying to salvage limbs, that are becoming gangrenous or toes that are already gangrenous and bringing blood supply back. So, that's kind of fueled, like we've talked about our passion, like to prevent this from happening in the first place, right? Because we just saw it at the end stage and it was too late for these people, right? So
Absolutely.
when
Yes,
did
that
you start that passion for prevention? And I want to hear about your story of your type 2 diabetes as well.
Right. So, there's it started off sort of as I hate to say it, but you kind of joke around, especially as vascular fellows. There's me and another guy, and we always said, everything we're doing for our patients, for these patients, these vascular bypasses, these stents to open up blocked arteries, all of this work that we're doing is not going to last that long because, people don't change their habits, they don't change how they eat, they don't change exercise, and because of that, the chronic diseases that lead to these end stage problems that lead them to, somebody like me, a vascular surgeon, they don't change their ways. And so, unfortunately, we have good job security, which I know it's a terrible thing to say, but when you're semi-young and joking around is one thing, but then if you get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, which is one of those chronic diseases that if you don't take care of can lead to, seeing somebody like me, like a vascular surgeon. So it was really because of that, and because of me myself being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and knowing that not changing your habits don't really change the long-term prognosis for chronic diseases. And so sort of in my first 2, 3 years, I spent a lot of time just trying to counsel folks about, taking better care of themselves. But unfortunately, like, you don't really have that much time in clinic or, hospital rounds to impress upon people how important it is to, manage your diabetes or manage your blood pressure or manage this and that and stop and smoking. You know, the things that, you know, you feel like you want to spend most of your time doing because it's going to help them more than, you know, my procedure. So my procedure is great short-term treatment, but like I said, after 2 years, you know, if they don't change their ways, they're back to see me. So I became more into health advocacy and helping people to, you know, focus more on prevention and taking more ownership of their diseases. And so, and not just thinking of their disease when they're seeing me or seeing their primary care doctor. It's just, you know, going home, you know, implement just walking, you know, 30 minutes a day and just, you know, things like that. And so that's what kind of led me along, you know, the lines of prevention and on this path of just health advocacy.
I do have a question. What was your aha moment that you said, I really need to get to the root of these causes instead of just treating the end symptoms? Did you have an aha moment somewhere in there for yourself? Because again, you were diagnosed.
So my aha moment was actually a patient. It was a patient that actually listened to me when I said, you need to walk, you need to manage your diabetes, you need to stop smoking. And so his wife was in there. So let me just back up. So before I even saw him, it was at a vascular clinic. I was probably 3, 4 years in as a attending. Before I even walked into the room, you could smell the nicotine. He wasn't smoking that much. I think he was like a 2-pack-a-day smoker. Plus, you know, he hadn't seen his doctor for his diabetes, stuff like that. So he was there to see me for peripheral arterial disease, which is he had blocked arteries in his leg. So now, whenever he walked, he'd get these terrible muscle cramps and it was debilitating. So he was actually there to see me for surgery. So instead of focusing on that, you know, like most of my patients with peripheral arterial disease, I focused on managing your chronic diseases and stopping these bad habits. And I talked about that for maybe, you know, as long as I could. But then since his wife was with him, she was writing down everything I was saying, you know? And so I think after that initial consultation, we talked about, you know, procedures, but I wanted to give him a chance to change some of his habits before even doing the procedure, which is something I learned along the way to try to, you know, try to just, I don't want to say force, but really impress upon people how important it is. So he came back to see me maybe a month later, and he has stopped smoking, which, ne well, I'm not going to say never happens, but it's very rare, unfortunately. So he stopped smoking, and he has started walking a couple of times a week. And so his wife was with him again, you know, really just pushing him to do these things. And so, you know, instead of, you know, pushing him to surgery, I waited another month. Just like, let's give it another month, keep walking. You know, so and so. And so when he came back, he was actually better as far as, you know, walking. And he can walk a longer distance before he got the, you know, the calf cramps. And so I was like, okay, you're doing pretty good. You know, let's keep moving along. You know, he stopped smoking, but he didn't, you know, go back to smoking. And so I ended up doing that maybe 3 or 4 times. And let's just say 6 months, you know, in, he still did not need surgery. Because what he had was claudication, which is like the early stage of peripheral arterial disease. And if people actually change their habits, you know, stop smoking, actually start exercising, most people really don't need surgery. It's just that most people don't change their habits. So that was my aha moment. And that's when I really said, I really got to push this health advocacy, at least for my patients with peripheral arterial disease. And it kind of just spread from that. I didn't just do it for peripheral arterial disease. Just anybody that saw me for anything, if they came in for varicose veins and they had diabetes, I'll talk to them about walking and making sure they manage their diabetes.
I love that story. And you know what? It just reminds us too about how much grace our body will give us if we create the right environment for us, right? Because I used to love watching when we would look at the vascular images. So we would see the blood vessels, we would see where they were blocked, and then we could also see what we call the collateral blood flow. So when there is a blockage, our body is trying to deal with that. So the smaller vessels that were around those big vessels that were blocked would start to get bigger. And like you said, with the exercise and the lifestyle changes, you can increase that collateral blood flow around the blockages, like the body creating its own bypass to help
Yeah.
improve the body. So that's why I love, like, our body is always working for
So
our
amazing.
good, right?
Right, exactly.
I
God
lo
did a
love
great
that.
job. Yeah.
Wow. So this is what you're talking about when you talk about the miracle of movement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just,
Okay.
yeah. So I just have to say, there's a lot of research, of course, into like surgeries, different procedures, the medications, all the great things they do for our body, the side effects of those medications. There has not been enough research on the effect of exercise on chronic diseases, not just peripheral arterial disease, but so many other diseases, even high blood pressure. It's just not. And when you search this and you see that, there's these incidental reports that you find that it's not a great study because there's not a lot of patients, but what they find is just so remarkable. And you wonder, why isn't a bigger study, involved? So let me just give you an example. There was a study looking at people with diabetes, if they exercise and whether or not they progress, their disease progressed to the point of having chronic renal disease, which is, one of the big complications from having diabetes, possible complications. What they found was, it wasn't a big study. It was probably like maybe 20 patients. So it's not a big study. But what they found is that the people that exercised at least 1 mile, well, walked at least 1 mile a day or ran at least half a mile a day on average, those folks did not have any renal, didn't develop renal disease, did not develop renal decline at all. The people that didn't exercise did. And then the conclusion of that study was like, we need more research. Well, that study was like 10 years ago. Where's the, so it's like there's plenty of time to have done research on this. So I just think that we need to impress upon people how important movement is, and we need to do more research to see the power of exercise for chronic disease.
Yeah. So when did you first get your diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, and what journey did you take to resolve that?
So I was I think it was a fourth year surgical resident, and so I was doing ped surgery at the time, and I had all these symptoms, and you know how it is. It's like you're like, I'm always thirsty. I'm getting up in the middle of the night, always going to the bathroom. And because of that, I'm always tired. Like, this sounds like diabetes, but it can't be diabetes. I'm young. I'm a young guy. I'm not obese. I mean, I was, a little chubby, but I'm not obese. I can't have diabetes. So I put it off, put it off, put it off. And finally, I was in the ER for something, and I asked one of the nurses to do a urine dip, a test. And so it was positive for, sugar in my urine. And, I ended up getting some blood draws that night, and my blood sugars were I don't remember the exact number, but it was in the 600s. And so,
Oh my.
yeah. And,
Wow.
I ended up getting admitted, IV insulin, the whole deal. And, the great thing about working in a hospital all the time, 90, 100 hours a week, was that everybody. And so everybody was coming to me, all these attendings, internal medicine guys, and I was like, oh, it's okay, Gerard, you're going to be fine. Just need to take insulin. And, I was like, I don't want to take insulin for the rest of my life. Like, that's a, that's not the life I had planned for me. So I get more into just reading about, what diet changes do I need to make to get off of insulin, and what changes do I need, as far as exercise? And I was like, what's the bare minimum? Because I'm always tired anyway, so I'll do the minimum amount of exercise and as much, better eating as I can to get off this insulin. And so
Well,
that's what.
plus you're probably working long hours, and yeah.
At least
Eating
80 hours a week. Most of the
crap
time it
food
was
at the
longer than that.
hospital, vending
Yeah, just
machines.
crap eating, my thing was Funyuns and Pepsi out of the
Good.
vending machine,
Yeah.
it was just,
Yeah.
terrible. So
Yeah.
yeah, I had to change all of that. And I tried
So
different diets, and what worked for me was just, and I'm not promoting one diet over the other. It's just whatever diet works best for you and you can stick to, I think works great. I know that's a little controversial because, well, for different reasons, but I chose a diet that was lower in carbs, but had a little bit more protein and healthy fats, and got rid of all the soda. Well, I do drink Mountain Diet Mountain Dew every now and then, but I got rid of all of that, And I made exercise like vital. Like there's no excuse to me not to get up and do some type of exercise. And I've been that way for the last, what, 15 years, and it's really helped me. And it's prevented me from having, well, a lot of issues with diabetes that I could have had. And, you
Where's
know,
your A1C at today? And are we able to get off the insulin and all any oral meds or no?
well, I'm on oral meds, but I'm off the insulin. So thank God for that. But my
Good. Awesome.
A1C was like low sixes, like 6.2, 6, something like that. So I'm
All
doing
right.
pretty good with that.
Wow. How does faith actually come into play with your journey?
So, I don't think it's really talked about a lot in medicine, even though I know a lot of doctors talk about faith personally with their patients. But when you talk about the education and things like that, it's not really stressed, I should say. I'm trying to choose my words carefully. But for me, as far as getting better and managing myself, there's a couple of things. One is, we tend to rely super heavily on medicine and on doctors and on providers for all of our care when we should really be praying to God. I am a tool. Like I will say myself, like no one should depend solely on me for their health or for their healing. They should be praying to God, and God uses me as a tool and uses providers as a tool. And that's, I tell people all the time, especially now, I tell patients now that, God is your source. And you, the patient, is the chief medical officer. I work for them. I am there to serve them. And so it's all about faith in God, but then doing the work to come and see me and come see their providers and doing what their providers tell them to do. And so that's how faith, I believe, should be comes into play. And for my journey as well, it was exactly that. I mean, some days I didn't feel like getting up to, run. Some mornings I had to get up at 4 a.m. to run because, there's the only time I had to do it. And the only way I did that was saying the scripture, something that, gave me the strength to get out of bed and get through that front door and get out there and run. And so
I love that humility that you express around it too, because, and I don't know if there's vascular surgeons, I don't deal with too much of them these days, or if too many of them are like this nowadays. But when I was practicing, it was 30 years ago, they all had the God complex. They thought they were God, and they were the smartest thing in the world, and they couldn't, nobody could tell them, any different. The huge, huge ego. So the humility that you bring to the profession, is really, really wonderful. And the,
Oh, I
the
appreciate it.
incorporating the faith.
I appreciate it. It's because of people like Dr. Tamika that knock me down whenever I feel like I'm not, I'm just joking. It's the truth, and maybe it's because I went through my own diagnosis, but I mean it's absolutely the truth. And I think at least the doctors that I know, maybe not vascular surgeons, but the primary care doctors that we come close with over the years, they implement, they talk about faith all the time with their patients. And so I think it needs to be more talked about. Not only that, but lifestyle changes, which is
Yes.
something that most doctors don't talk about, unfortunately. Most providers don't talk about that.
Well, and again, I've learned so much from being on this podcast with Rita. And one of the biggest things I learned is that the doctors don't have time. I didn't realize how crunched for time they are on each appointment. And I get it. I mean, when you're in a practice like that, it's about how many patients you can see. And run through the practice, because I mean, there's a never ending line. I get that.
It's terrible. It feels like, well, it's more than just feels. It's profit over patients, unfortunately. And that's our medical system. And when you have office hours between 8 and 12 and you have an OR case at 1, and then they're calling you at 12:15, you got to go and do whatever to get your OR, your surgical case ready. But you're still in the office, you have this pressure to hurry up and get out of there. You don't have time to tell people to stop smoking, and it's our system, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to say that it is starting to change. It's always slower than we want it to be, right? But the American College of Lifestyle Medicine has actually been just celebrated 20 years last year. So it's continuing to grow. More practitioners are becoming involved and getting certified and learning the principles of lifestyle medicine. And I'm happy to say that I was just invited to speak at a metabolic health conference at Campbell University in September,
Oh, good.
and it's all about metabolic health. So they asked me to speak about lifestyle medicine strategies to improve metabolic health. So it's becoming more prevalent, and I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was excited as well. Last October, I had the opportunity to speak at a conference, and it was all about biohacking and
Oh,
things
yeah.
we can do as far as fasting or just things that we can do outside of the medical profession as we know it, to have better health. The way that we dig a little deeper on how our food is engineered, or more about sleep patterns and more about relaxation and stress and then diets and fasting. And we had several doctors that were also speakers, and so a lot of times in the audience they would say, what's the one thing that you, if you could just say one thing, what would it be that would help somebody's health? And hands down, they all said exercise and diet.
Yeah,
You know,
absolutely.
if you can just zero in on exercise and diet, you can change a lot of the conditions. The
Yeah.
of so
It's the best medicine that we have.
Yeah,
Yeah, and
absolutely. Better
pharmaceutical
any
drugs.
pill, any procedure, better.
Pharmaceutical drugs just maintain you where you are, but lifestyle changes can actually reverse the chronic diseases. And we've seen that in vascular studies as well. There's cardiovascular surgeons who have done studies where the blockages have been reduced and blood vessels start opening up from just diet and exercise.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
quitting smoking. So smoking is huge, right? Causes vasospasm and really clamps down those blood vessels.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I
Well,
think
I know.
we're all. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that you like to run. That was in
Oh,
your
yeah.
bio, and you talked a little bit about running, and that you would leave at 4 a.m. to run because that was the only time you had. And I am an advocate of walking a 5K every day. I'm not a runner, but I do walk a 5K every day. Very rarely do I not get in my 5K. And everybody says, oh my gosh, that's so much. Well, when you really think about it, it's a 5K is like 3 miles.
Yeah.
And if you just walk 20 minutes after breakfast, 20 minutes after lunch, and 20 minutes after dinner, you've walked a 5K.
Right, exactly.
And you don't have to do all 5K at the same time.
Right.
If you can just walk 20 minutes 3 times a day, just I've left a restaurant before and walked for 20 minutes around the restaurant building before I got in my car. And I do that pretty regularly when we're traveling, and you're on the freeway or on maybe a toll road, and you're like, oh, it's lunchtime, and you pull over and have lunch, and then I just walk around the restaurant for 20 minutes before I get back in my car and I'm on my way.
Oh yeah,
And
this is brilliant.
it's awesome.
that gets in my 5K. So if you could, if somebody doesn't want to run and they go, oh, I don't want to run, I hate
Oh
exercise,
yeah.
well, how
Hear
do
that a
you
lot.
encourage them to get in some of that movement? What do you recommend?
So I tell folks, because I hear that a lot, I can't run, I got a bad hip, I got a bad knee. Well, I tell them all the time, and you don't have to run. You just start with walking. I mean, you walked into this clinic, you walk, walked up to shake my hand. Like, you can walk 20 minutes, like you said, 3 times a day. It's easy. You're doing it already. You just got to set out the time to do it and make it a habit. Make it an important habit. As important as eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, just walking 20 minutes is that important, because it literally save your life. And I tell them, sometimes I got to get blunt, but unfortunately, especially with guys, you got to scare them a little bit. I'm like, you can either walk, or you can have me cut your foot off. Like, which one you want?
Oh.
And unfortunately, it's that serious, because they're sitting here with peripheral arterial disease and with these blocked arteries. And I'm trying to tell them how important, how bad that is. And the long-term results with anybody with blocked arteries is not as good as somebody without blocked arteries.
Right.
But and they're just don't seem like they're getting it. I'm telling them, lay off the cupcakes, lay off whatever's driving your blood sugar out, and they're just like, whatever, doc. That's what I've been eating for years. They actually tell me that. I say, okay, well, how about this? Walk 20 minutes 3 times a week, I mean, 3 times a day, or you're gonna be back to see me cut your leg off, man. And
I
it's
would
only, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you can finish.
That's the only way people start to wake up to see how, one, how important it is to exercise, and two, that they can actually prevent me from ever having to operate on them if they just walk. And so,
Yeah. You talk about men need to be scared a little bit sometime. I would throw in the erectile dysfunction conversation too,
Oh,
because that's
yeah.
huge. And
That'll do it.
then their eyes open up. They're like, oh,
Yeah,
okay.
exactly. Oh my goodness. So yeah. So besides walking, I mean, I've done some things like I joined well, first I joined a boxing a gym, but join any type of martial arts or any type of gym that gets you exercising. There's some yoga gyms or yoga places I hear that really get your heart rate up. But any activity that gets your heart rate up. Some people just garden, which the American Heart Association says you do gardening 150 minutes a week. That's equivalent to walking, as far as like, your heart, prevention of heart disease. But it's sort of just figuring out what kind of exercise you love to do that you can be consistent with, which I think walking is the easiest, but I mean, gardening works. But finding something that's consistent that you can do and do that, throughout the week.
Yeah,
Oh, I
absolutely.
get it.
You got to
Yeah,
find
that.
something you like or you enjoy. That's what I always talk about. What do you enjoy? Because that's the thing that you're going to be the most consistent with, right? If you hate it,
Exactly.
you're not going to last very long.
Right,
Well,
exactly.
I have a little side note. I can remember back in my probably in my 30s, I was spending a lot of time at my desk. I was in an office type environment. I had my own business, and I felt like I had to, be this overachiever because I was so young and it was a male dominated field. And so I was just had my nose to the grindstone, as they say. And I realized that I was lacking in a lot of areas. I was lacking in social, I was lacking in community, I was lacking in exercise. And so I thought, what could I do? Because I didn't have a lot of extra time. What could I do to get all of those things? And I came up with, and again, in my 30s, this don't laugh, I came up with square dancing, of
Oh,
all things. And
that.
I found a square dancing club, and I joined the club. And the folks were so nice. So there was that community, there was that social piece to it. And then the square dance team, we would travel all around and dance at other clubs, and it was active because we practiced 3 nights a week, and then we would dance square dance on the weekends. And you had that community and the exercise, and it fulfilled all the things that I was lacking. But the thing that was my aha moment was when I realized that the average age was like 70 in this square dance
Wow.
club. And there were 80 and 90-year-olds that were just swinging around the square. And it was because they were active and they had
Absolutely.
community and they had friendships and they just had all of those parts and pieces that make the human body function at its optimal level. And so
Exactly.
that made such an impression on me at the time. And so now, because I don't know if Rita has figured it out or not, but I can be just a little bit of a workaholic, just a little bit. And so for me, what I've discovered is if I get involved in something social that's also active, like a bike, I'm in a bike club. I'm in a ballroom dance club. We still do square dancing occasionally, but it's not as easy to find clubs these days that are doing the square dancing. But we are in a ballroom dance club, and we do the bike club, and I'm in a hiking group. And so we are finding that we do things that are not only social, but also physically active. And that makes such a big difference in my world,
Absolutely.
especially.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I love what you said that, it's not just the exercise, we have that community there and you have the social aspect. because I think it's a growing epidemic now that, we're just not as connected as we were because of, social media, the internet, what have you. And I keep seeing these reports, every 2, 3 years about how there's increased mental, depression, things like that. And it's because, like, we're not connected. And so, that is super important what you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That and that is one of the six pillars of lifestyle medicine too, with positive social connections. There's plenty of research around that too. Isolation, it just decreases longevity and like you said, so many other things, depression, anxiety, cardiovascular disease, just everything. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons that I like the meetup platform, the meetup.com platform, which is where we have our Fit as a Fiddle Plus organization there so folks can find us. But when I even travel away from home, I can always go over on the meetup and put in the city that I'm in, and I can always find a meetup group or two that is doing something that I'm interested in, even if it's a cooking class or a painting class or maybe it's a group that are they're going to be hiking at one of the parks on the weekend or whatever. There's always some way that I can connect with other folks and remain active. So I'll just put that out there. If any of you are listening to this later on the recording and you're like, oh, I don't have that kind of a social outlet, there's all kinds of ways that you can overcome that by just getting out and getting involved in topics that you like. And you'll find folks there that are like-minded.
Yeah,
And if you
absolutely.
want to start getting more active and walking or biking or swimming or dancing or whatever it is, just join a group that does that.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
absolutely.
Absolutely. So besides running, and what do you do for fun, Doc? I know you're busy with three kids and all their activities, but what do you and Tamika like to do
There's
for
his
fun
exercise right
or
there.
by yourself, yeah, besides
Yeah.
running?
Yep. So besides running, I walk a lot with Tamika. So I don't
Okay.
want to torture her with trying to run. But I mean, just doing that, and then we get into like every now and then, like me and my son, we'll go to there's an MMA gym in Raleigh that we love to do together. And so it gives my oldest son the opportunity to punch his dad in the chest without any backlash from me. But I like exercise, and so if it's not running or walking or MMA with my son, I love going to movies with my kids, seeing science fiction movies, stuff like that. And I could call it for fun, but it's not really for fun. But I have a lot of other passions, like real estate investing. But we were talking about that earlier. I love doing that, and that takes up a lot of my time.
Yeah. So tell people, so now you're doing you have a vein clinic, right?
Oh, that's right. We just opened
Yeah,
a vein
so
clinic.
is this your own practice or a group practice or
No, this is a different model. I'm almost like a franchisee. So it's the USA Vein Centers,
okay.
and so it's their center, and man, that center is in Cary, North Carolina. It's specifically focused on just treating varicose veins and chronic venous insufficiency. And so yeah, we just opened that.
Nice, nice. And so where can people find you there if they're struggling with their varicose veins and spider veins and they need help with that? Do you have a website for that or a or well we can put your information up on the page. Kathy will share that with everybody if they're looking for somebody who needs that service in
Yep,
Cary, North
exactly.
Carolina.
Yep. So, if you Google search, vein center in Cary, North Carolina, I'll pop up. Or if you go to usaveincenters.com and just search, North Carolina, and you'll see,
Okay.
my office in Cary, North Carolina.
Awesome.
When we actually do the recording, I'll include all of that in the
Oh.
description under the recording as well. So when folks are listening, I'll look up your links and put your links in there as well. So
Okay.
that way folks can just click right on the link and it'll take them over to your websites.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
So, is there
perfect.
any last minute messages that you want to share with anyone that you feel like you want the world to know?
Oh, well, for me, God is number one in my life. It's the only way I was able to do anything in my life, you know. So, that includes becoming a doctor, becoming a vascular surgeon. It's the favor of God. And so I got to tell people to trust God, not just faith in God, but you got to trust Him to lead and guide you and, the way you should go. And, it's a hard thing to do. And so, what I do to enable me to allow God to just take control of my life is renewing my mind with scripture, with just being around people who believe like you, have faith like you, which is super important as well. Because if you don't know already, faith looks crazy to people who without faith. So that's my number one thing I want to share with everybody.
And as far as health and wellness,
So as far as health and wellness, change your habits. And it is a lifelong journey to change your habits and become healthier. When I say become healthier, a lot of times it's just getting rid of the bad habits, getting rid of going to McDonald's and Burger King when you're hungry instead of, getting something healthy to eat. Being able to stack your refrigerator with healthy foods is like key to that for me, and I think for most people who change their lives. So if you just stop buying the bad and start stocking your refrigerator with more vegetables, more plums and apples when you want something sweet instead of like cupcakes from the bakery, you're changing your life already. So just, you got to become an active member of your healthcare team. Like I said, people are their own chief medical officer, and doctors and providers are tools. So read, learn what you have to do to eat healthy. Talk to people like Rita and Kathy about how to change your life. Whatever help you need is out there. You just got to become active and not a passive member of your health.
Awesome.
Well, and you have to want to. It goes back to
Yeah.
where you have to scare your patient or your client sometimes. And I find that folks really don't change until they have to.
Yeah,
You
unfortunately.
know, a lot of times they don't change because they want to. They don't change until they have to. And so just know that Dr. Gerard is a great guy, but you don't want to see him unless you have
Yeah. Don't want to see me. I don't want to see me.
to.
Absolutely.
Thank
Well,
you so much. I really appreciate you being on with us tonight. This has been very, very fun to talk with you and listen and hear your journey. And Dr. Tamika, thank you for being with us tonight, listening in. And Rita, as always, thank you for being here as my
my
co-host, my
pleasure.
co-mod.
My
And
pleasure.
again, Dr. Gerard, put in the chat under everyone, if you would. What is the best way if somebody wanted to connect directly with you, if they had questions, where might they find you the easiest?
Well, the easiest is email. And so I'm putting my email in here, GerardDDayMD@gmail.com.
Very good.
So there we go right
Excellent.
there.
GerardDayMD@gmail.com.
Yep.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. I think I left off the D.
Gerard D Day. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah,
So
I
it's
didn't see it.
three Ds.
Three D's. Gerard D Day.
There we
All
go.
right.
Yep. That's the
All
best
right.
way to contact me is by email. Also, like I said, locally, you could just, Google search me or at the information that you're going to provide.
All right. Very good. And it is
Awesome.
with three D's, correct?
Yep. Three Ds. That's right.
Okay. I got it. All right. Thank you so much. And
Thank
again,
y'all.
I'll put the recording on across all of our podcast channels, and I will send you a link with all of
Okay,
the recordings.
I greatly appreciate it. Thank y'all. This was
Thanks.
fun.
Thanks for being
Yes,
here.
thank you.
This
Talk to everyone soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.